Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
There has to be an existential force of positivity available to whoever, for whatever reason. And if I can perpetuate that, then I think I'm doing a good job. You know, when you have the attention of so many people, you have an obligation, you know. And if your heart is in the right place, if you have a good heart, then you're going to want to influence those folks in a positive way. And if you're doing it for, if you're doing a negative, or if you're influencing in a negative way for money, that loses all credibility with me.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments, handmade with love in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and the Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Acoustic Syndicate is one of the best acoustic rock and Americana bands on earth. Fronted by Steve McMurray, the band's music leans towards themes of sustainability, social justice, and quality of life, and they built a loyal following over the last 30 years. Steve is as down to earth as they come. He still farms the land his ancestors first tended over 200 years ago near Shelby, North Carolina. And we get together every Thanksgiving for a hometown holiday jam in Brevard, where I get absolutely blown away by the gravity of this musical titan. I was honored he agreed to join us for an episode of the Happy Hour, and I know you'll love his story and his insights and humility. This episode was recorded live at the Grey Eagle in Asheville, North Carolina, on May 19th, 2021.
Live from the Grey Eagle in Asheville, the Pearl of Carolina, it's the Travis Book Happy Hour. With special guest Steve McMurray and the Happy Hour House Band featuring Mike Ashworth and Mike Gugino. And now, your host and mine, Travis Book.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour. I'm Travis Book. That was Bill. I mean, that fantastic intro. I just realized today I was driving up here, this is the 19th episode of the Travis Book Happy Hour. I don't know what that means, but here we are. And I know that this is probably Mike Ashworth's third or fourth. Do you even remember?
I'm really bad at that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're more of a, like, in-the-moment kind of guy.
Yeah. I think it might be more, though.
Man, you want to play a tune?
Yeah.
Let's play y'all a song. I'm going to play a couple songs before we get Steve out here. I'm really excited about tonight's show. Steve McMurray is the king, and you already know this because you're here. And if you're tuning in online, you probably already know that. But if you don't, hold on to your shorts. This song I wrote not too long ago, and I just taught it to Mike.
Lord, asking for the reasons why, denying what you feel inside. I'm alright, nothing's wrong, it's a never ending song. It goes on.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. This is a song I do often, a song by Jonah Tolchin, a song of hope called Beauty in the Ugliest Days.
Troubled mind to see the beauty in the ugliest of days. When I call, I know you'll be there. When I fall, I don't have to be scared, cause you called me now. Just like you called me back. Taught me to see the beauty in the ugliest today. Ride with the wave. It's up to you to see the beauty in the ugliest today. Yeah, it's all up to you to see the beauty in the ugliest today. Yeah, it's all up to you to see the beauty in the ugliest today.
Thank you. That's Mike and Mike. I don't know what to say about this guy. He's so amazing, man, and he can sing me absolutely under the table. Please make him welcome the one and only Steve McMurray. Steve, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
Doing better?
I'm good. I'm better now.
Doing better now?
Yeah, I've been on the night shift for the last year, so I'm ready. I'm excited about seeing the daylight.
Yeah, and excited to play some music, man.
Yeah, man.
And I know you got some new music coming out. I know Acoustic Syndicate is recording, and we'll get to that. I wanted to ask you just a little bit. Dig back. You know, you grew up playing music, and ultimately ended up in a band with your cousins.
Yeah. Yeah, we it's kind of a family affair. Everybody's heard the story probably, but when I was 12, Brian and Fitz and my parents got together and decided they wanted to have a band. So they bought me a fiddle, bought Brian a banjo, and bought Fitzy a guitar.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. I started out playing the fiddle. And let me just tell you, if you're going to be 12 years old and trying to learn how to fiddle, you better either be dialed in or have some good drugs, because I didn't have the attention span for it. And,
right.
You know, but I did kind of, you know, I took off on it for a little while, but that's how that started. And then they would, you know, trot us off up in front of the church, and we'd have to sing the acapella stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily voluntary.
Interesting. Well, your father was the minister, is that right?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, so that, you know.
Well, that complicates things.
It does complicate things. there's a level of authority there that you just don't, you know. You got it coming from all kinds of places.
That's kind of like the double whammy. It's like you got your father figure, but your father also undeniably has the force of God behind
yeah.
him. You know, he's already got it on the highest authority.
Yeah. Well,
tough man to argue with, I imagine.
You know what? He was pretty cool, though, man. He never really worked the guilt thing too hard.
Yeah.
That was all on Mom. Mom did that. But he kind of would just, you know, hey, you know, he was sort of cool, man. He wasn't too heavy about it, but
good.
If he wanted you to really do something, he had his ways. He could get you to do it. So,
when did you start writing songs?
Oh man, I picked you out one tonight. One of the first songs that I ever wrote that I'm gonna bring back out. We never recorded. I don't really know the answer to that question. I would say I was in my teens, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is a long time ago. but I don't really, you know, I can't really remember. I think the first thing that I recorded to actually put on a record was No Time.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think so. I'm not sure. I can't remember exactly. But it's been going on a while. And a lot of stuff that I wrote, unfortunately, back in my early 20s, I don't have anymore. I've either lost it,
right,
or I can't remember it, or, you know, and I was digging through some stuff recently and found this old tune that I'm going to play for you later, and I'd kind of forgotten about it. And I was like, whoa, yeah, I did do that, didn't I? But, no, it's been going on a while. I'm a fan of songwriters, you know. And
clearly.
I always sort of gravitated towards those more song-oriented artists.
Who are your biggest songwriting influences?
I'll tell you what, man. Not so much as a writer, but my mom, when I was 9 or 10, bought me Pete Seeger's Live from the Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
And he had a couple of originals on there, but all of those songs on that record, I don't know why, it just hit me hard, man. It's like everything on, and that's where I learned Roll On Columbia, which is on the Big Daddy Bluegrass Band album, and a couple of others. As far as writers go, you know, I think probably early on, it was Willie Nelson.
Oh, that's beautiful, man.
When I was in my teens, you know, I latched onto that. I was totally the country outlaw. I had the trucker's hat, the flannel shirt, you know, and I was delving into two worlds, you know. I was over here with the new waivers, you know, and then I would lose that crowd and go over here and hang out with my buddies in the outlaw scene, you know. So I was working everything. But, I mean, I loved all kinds of music, but I was totally into the outlaw thing. I mean, Waylon and Willie and all of those guys coming up. My dad would roll over in his grave if he knew this, but when I was 16 years old, I lied and I told him I was going to go spend the night with my friend over in Troutman, and I did not. I went to see Willie Nelson in Charlotte at the old Coliseum. Sorry, Dad. Probably going to get it one of these days.
I bet you're forgiven.
Maybe.
You were going.
You know, Dad was a huge Willie fan, so I mean, you know, it's probably all good.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if you're sneaking out to go see like one of the greatest entertainers of all time.
Yeah, man.
You got to cut a guy some slack for that. It's interesting you mentioned Pete Seeger because to pivot back to that, because that music is, and this is something that we were talking about on a text thread the other day. It seems so sort of obvious when you say it out loud, but it actually matters what you sing about.
Oh yeah,
man. And you have it doesn't seem like you've wasted a lot of your time. You don't seem to sing about trivial things. Your music matters, and you write about what I like to refer to as like matters of being, questions about how we live our lives, and that sort of thing. Do you think that Pete Seeger, like, do you think that that was Do you think that there was like some early influence there with that music being so sort of message oriented, and that music was a vehicle for getting across an idea?
Yeah, I think a lot of that comes from my dad. So, Dad was always real cool. Even though he was a Methodist preacher, he was never really a heavy dude. You know, he was always pretty lighthearted. But I never did really get the full benefit of. I was the black sheep of the family. No question about it. My sisters made out way better than I did, But I, you know, all of that wasn't lost on me. So I tried to incorporate the positive message of all of that into the music without getting too heavy on it, you know.
Yep.
And it's just kind of been the driving force, and I don't. It wasn't a conscious decision at any one time.
Sure.
It was just sort of a natural evolution, and I just decided it was a positive thing, and it was a good thing to do and a good way to go, and I kind of just stuck with it, you know. So that's where my songwriting orients from, yeah. Originates from, you know. It's just the world is so crazy, man. I live in a world that's you know, I work around a bunch of construction workers every day, and it's not the most positive attitude, I can tell you. So there has to be an existential force of positivity available to whoever, for whatever reason. And if I can perpetuate that, then I think I'm doing a good job.
Well, I think you are. Amen, brother. I think you are doing a good job. And I think it's obvious that you've had that orientation from the very beginning. It wasn't like this is like a late realization, you know. I mean, it sort of dawned on me at one point. I was like, man, I'm only going to sing so many songs in my life.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't want to sing about, you know, like for example the song that we crossed off our list, like Brown Mountain Lights.
Yeah.
I was blown away years ago when Ricky Skaggs played Black Eyed Susie on the CMAs. I felt like that was just a really big missed opportunity. And not to name names, but I just named names. It has sort of dawned on me later in life that it's not just entertaining. There is an opportunity to do something more.
Well, you know, when you have the attention of so many people, you have an obligation. You know, and if your heart is in the right place, if you have a good heart, then you're going to want to influence those folks in a positive way. And if you're doing it for if you're doing a negative, or if you're influencing in a negative way for money, that loses all credibility with me.
It does with the universe too, I think.
I'm a working stiff. I'm going to make my living the way I make my living, and I just to do that in order to make money is wrong on every level for me. But if that's what you're doing, fine. And I'm not going to criticize you for it. Because every artist is different, and they have their own justification for what they're doing.
Totally.
Far be it from me to judge what you're doing as right or wrong. I'm not that guy. But I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
And I just got to keep doing that.
Yeah, man. Well, speaking of keeping doing that. Yeah, come on, give it up to Steve, man. Come on. Speaking of keeping doing that, we'll talk about a couple more things, and then we'll get you playing a little bit, and we could talk some more later. Acoustic Syndicate is recording. You guys are in the studio, and
yeah.
You're putting out music.
Yeah, man.
That is, talk about good news. Like, talk about bringing the good news to the people. That's great to hear, man. That's exciting.
Well, thank you, man. A couple of times in the Syndicate history, we've sort of thought, well, maybe it's done, you know. The first time we sort of knocked off, there was a lot going on in the families, you know, the extended families. You know, Brian and Fitz both had little babies,
yeah,
two apiece. My wife was going on through some spinal issues, and we had had like multiple surgeries, and we were looking at multiple more, and I was just gone all the time. And then the bottom fell out of the record industry, and there was no way to make a living selling records. And the only way we were going to do it is to tour 250 nights a year. And that was just not doable at that time,
right.
You know. And it was just like, so we all just sort of made a conscious effort to just sort of, you know, I sure would like to wake up in my bed in the morning. And so, you know, that's just kind of how that worked out. Then we kind of picked back up a little bit after a bit of a break, a couple of years off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of more or less, I don't want to say ran its course, but it didn't look like there was too many more pinnacles on the horizon, you know. And then lo and behold, here comes Organic Records and Ty Gilpin, if you're listening. Thank you, brother. But, yeah. And they came, I got to put a lot of this on our bass player, Jay Sanders, for keeping the momentum going and keeping that conversation going with Ty and Organic Records and saying, look, we're not done. We still have some things to say. And that became the vehicle for getting these songs out that some of us have been sitting on for a while. And we talked about it very consciously over and over, and it's like, let's don't do all originals. Let's throw in some stuff that meant something to us along the way, you know?
Yeah.
As well as the original stuff, you know. So we started out with original, and then we came up with, I don't know if you've heard about it, but we released our version of Bertha, Grateful Dead Bertha, on Friday. And I was pretty damn proud of it.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So I'm excited, man. It's kind of got the old blood pumping again, you know what I mean? So I'm feeling a little better than I was 6 months ago.
Good, man. Well, I know that we want to hear more Acoustic Syndicate.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that there's more people out there like me that want to hear it.
Thank y'all.
And I know a lot of us are really happy to hear that you guys are making some more music. Speaking of making music, why don't we play for a little bit, and then we'll pick this conversation back up.
All right.
Feel all right about that?
Sounds good. So this is, I told this story last night. I meant to set it up last night and I forgot. So my mother was raised over here in Franklin, and her folks were from out, like, between Franklin and Murphy. But my grandfather, in 1929, when the crash came along, my mother was born in 32, and there was nothing, no jobs of any kind for a guy in Franklin, hardly at all. I mean, they farmed, but it was, you know, difficult. So the TVA came through, and they started building Fontana Dam over there near Bryson City. And my granddad got a job working on the crew over there. And they would come around and collect them on Sunday evening. And they'd ride them in the back of a truck, 10 guys, all the way over to Fontana. They'd spend all week working over there, clearing the ground for the lake. He swung a bush axe for 4 years. That's what he done. And then they would bring him home on Saturday night. So he had from Saturday evening to Sunday evening, one day, you know, and then the rest of the time he was spending. He did that for 4 years. Anyway, he told me a story not long before he died. I was asking him about that, and he said there was one old guy on the crew who was the cook, and he had made his way up here on a crew somehow from, like, the Delta region, like Alabama or somewhere down in Mississippi. I can't remember exactly where he was from, but anyway, all he wanted to do was just get home. And he got himself up here in the mountains of North Carolina and couldn't get home. And anyway, this song is about that guy. And they eventually took up enough money around his coworkers, you know, and got him a train ticket back to wherever it was he was living. But this is for him. Sometimes I'd like to come down early when the sweetest breeze is blowing that old summer season. The hard times that come back from where only strong men can go, and the dirty work's all done here in the town. I could pick up my things from the keeper, collect what pay is due me from the man, from the man. I could walk straight down the floodway where the water bends around, and follow strength left alone to get myself back home. I leave right now, but I guess I'm gonna stay. I'm gone tomorrow.
right now, but I guess I'm gonna stay. Oh, I'd leave right now, but I guess I'm gonna stay.
If you're enjoying this episode, I encourage you to check out Episode 7 with Benny Galloway, Episode 15 with Vince Herman, Episode 19 with Chris Jacobs, or Episode 22 with John Weisberger. Thanks for listening, and after the show, be sure to leave a review.
So, I got to set this one up for you, too, since we're telling stories. I was hanging out at my best friend's house one day, and she had a picture on her refrigerator door. Her kid was in the sixth grade, and I was like, that's interesting. What is that? She goes, it was a rainbow, and it had a little roller coaster car in it and had three guys on top of it going like this. Stick guys, you know. And anyway, Sam Burris, not Burris, I'm sorry, but Sam was responsible for that, and I think he was like 9. So this is where rainbow roller coaster came from, off of my friend's refrigerator door. A professional musician would have been tuning while he was telling that story. Like I say, Travis, you get what you pay for, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say, how would you even know? There's this great story. Dolly Parton's in the studio, and there's this thing that we use in the studio. It's the program. It's called Pro Tools. You know, it lets you edit, change pitch, and that kind of thing. She'd sung through, and she goes, all right, I want to sing it again. And they go, oh, don't worry about it, Dolly. We'll fix it in post-production. They go, we can do the auto-tune. We'll fix it in Pro Tools. And she goes, excuse me? He goes, yeah, we'll fix it in Pro Tools. She goes, excuse me, sir. You can keep your tools, and I'm the only pro around here. Roll it again.
Don't mess with Dolly. Rainbow was a roller coaster,
could take it anywhere. Wouldn't bring it back, I just. Would you go upside down with me? Oh, upside down. If you could, do you think that you'd come with me to the end of the line? You know I love you, and I want to make you my roller coaster.
Get right back into it, man. What do you let's talk, like, can we talk a little bit about home and about your sense of place?
Yeah, man.
Because I know for me, just this last year has taught me a lot about what it means to wake up in the same place, watch the seasons change, that sort of thing.
A lot of musicians are tuning into that, probably. You know, the whole COVID thing has been, it has been what it is, you know, and it's been problematic and so tragic and devastating for so many people, but it has also given a lot of these working, hardworking musicians like Travis the chance to be home with their kids for a while, you know, and that's got to be a good thing. If you got to take a piece of positivity out of this whole negative thing, that would be one thing that you could pick out to think about, you know, is being home, because a lot of people don't get to do that. I grew up the son of a Methodist preacher, and we bounced around every 5 years, so I never really got to put down any roots. But I knew where my family roots were, and that was up in the upper end of Cleveland County, North Carolina, where the McMurrays have been since 1789.
Whoa.
So I always kind of knew where I was going to plug back down, you know, but it just I never did know for sure, but that just kind of seemed like the logical place for me because my roots ran deep there, and I had lots of extended family there. Fitz and Brian, all my cousins were there.
Yep.
So that seemed like the logical thing to do, but since I have been able to reestablish myself there in that dirt, in that ground, on that place in this world, I don't think I'll ever leave.
I think
that's where I'm going to. They're gonna bury me right there.
That's awesome, man. That's beautiful. There's gotta be an immense sense of relief to feel that way.
It is, because I never, you know, every home we ever had was never home, because you knew just in a few years you're just gonna have to pull up and move off somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the only place my dad started out as a school teacher in Boone, and he bought himself a little house, little tiny little house up on the side of a mountain. And was somehow able to hang on to that thing. It was right up on the Tennessee line, and that was the only home I ever knew, even though we didn't stay there but 2 or 3, 4 weeks out of the year.
Right.
You know, and it was all we could do to keep it from falling down. You know, but it was our home. It was, you know, our little cabin on the side of the mountain. And that was the only place that was home because it never changed.
Right.
It was like grandma's house. You know, nothing ever changes. Everything's always the same, and, you know, you could always expect it to be the same when you walked in the next time. So that was a real grounding element in our lives as kids growing up, my sisters and my brother, and our family, and I think my parents had that in mind when they decided to keep that place.
Right.
So
a place you could point to on a map,
right, and say this is ours.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't have that. You know, I'm very, very, very fortunate in that regard because there's so many people I know that I work with on a daily basis. You know, that are not from this country, or they're from somewhere else, you know, up north or out west, or, you know, people get supplanted for one reason or another, whatever that reason is, you know, either immigration or you know, whatever it is that makes you have to pull up and move off.
Yeah.
You know, I feel for folks like that because they don't have that terminal root into the ground somewhere, you know, that they can always feel that structure support, you know, and a lot of people don't have that, and I'm fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, you totally are, man. Speaking of foundation and root, beneath all of it, what do you think? Sort of like, what do you think is your role in this unfolding in the dance? What is your role in all of this? What orients you?
Well, I hate to keep going back to it, but I think that I am ordained by some higher power to be a positive influence on people with a message. To be a positive message, to always try to uplift people and not tear them down. I think that's why we're here. I think that's the broader message of Acoustic Syndicate in general. We all have that same ideology. We all subscribe to that doctrine, and we all sort of reinforce that daily, and it comes out in the songwriting, you know. But it's like I said, it wasn't something we decided one day that we were going to do. It was just it's how we were brought up, basically.
I was gonna say it sounds like that's a family tradition.
It's genetic, and it's I don't really know what else to add to that, but I do think that's my calling. If I ever had a calling, I think that's it, to spread good love, good vibes, good cheer, and positivity as far and as wide as I can.
Amen, brother. You're in the right place. Just a few more sort of. This is like the lightning round.
Lightning round.
But don't feel like. Yeah, we love you, Big Daddy. Don't feel like you have to answer them short. But what do you hope for?
Pay the light bill.
You hope to pay your light bill.
Yeah.
Simple. You know,
pay the bills.
A wise man once said, keep your overhead low. What do you?
That was a very wise man, by the way.
Yeah, I picked it up on a Paul Rudd movie, actually. Yeah. That's where I get most of this stuff, actually.
I do want to expound on that for just a minute, but I don't have any grandiose delusions about where I'm supposed to wind up someday. I mean, shoot, man, I'm 55 years old. What's going to happen to me? You know? with this body, I could go anywhere, really. I don't have any lofty notions about where I'm headed.
Yeah.
Man, I just got to keep moving forward.
That's it.
And do the best I can and pay the light bill.
And pay the light bill.
Yeah.
What are you, is there anything that you're afraid of?
Snakes.
I knew you were going to say that. You farmers, you're all the same.
You don't like them snakes. Fitz will reach down and pick up the god-awfulest looking thing you've ever seen. My father was, I'm going to blame this all on Joe. My father was terrified of snakes. Absolutely. I mean, that was Satan incarnate right there on the ground. And he didn't want anything to do. I came in one time with a snake in my pocket. I picked up a little green snake. We lived in Statesville. And I walked in the back door, and I said, "Dad, look what I found." And he said, "You get that thing out of here right now, or I'm going to whip your tail." So I'm like, I was gone. But no, I'm not afraid of much, man. You know, I'm not afraid of failure. That was never I don't have too many fears. I think fear is used by a lot of people for all the wrong reasons. And you can't go through your life afraid.
Totally.
You have to be secure, you know, you have to have faith and you got to keep moving forward.
Well, yeah, it's very easy to be manipulated or to get off your center, to get off your game, to sort of lose control of your situation when you're letting fear motivate you.
Yeah, my wife would probably tell you a different story about me, but my thing is you can sweat about the big thing all you want to, you know, but what are you going to do about it?
Right.
So what's in your control? What's out of your control? Not much.
Right.
You know, what you've got control over is right here. And you just gotta do that good. And the rest of it will take care of itself.
That's yeah. There's a saying, give me the strength to change the things that I can and the grace to accept those things that I can't. That's exactly. Not saying it correctly, but that is
it's close enough.
The serenity prayer, right? Yeah. I mean, what a powerful perspective, you know. What last question, and then we'll get back to playing some more music. What are you happy about?
Man, I'm happy to be making music again.
Yeah, brother.
The thing I miss most about this whole pandemic thing is I am addicted to that energy that is right here. You know, this thing that I've been doing for 30 years. You know, playing in front of music, playing in front of people. When that got cut off, that was a huge void. And I know your life, everybody's lives, Mike's, everybody's. Especially if you do this for a living, it's a difficult thing. But when you do it like I do for the joy of it, and that joy has been taken away from you, that's a huge void, and there's nothing to fill it. You can try, and I just look forward to being able to get back out and share these music experiences with everybody, because this is why we do it. These people right here.
Yep. Well, let's get back to it. Let's get back to spreading the good word. That's Steve McMurray, everyone. Legend. Mike and Mike, join us again.
there she is, my old friend. She comes back again each spring to be with me. Time reveals my age. She always looks the very same. The years come and go, and the hard times they show on my face. She shines like the moon, spreads her love around this place. And the magic of that moment when the morning sun finds her face so bare. And all at once the worries of my heart come and lark and fall away. Without a word she comforts me, always knowing what to say. Returns to her mother so that she can mend her body and her soul. She bows her head as if to say a prayer and then slowly fades away. And whispers, I love you, and you know that I'll come back to you someday. Thank you. 20 years of traveling is wearing out my shoes. 20 years of good times, oh, but I still get the blues. The journey never slows, and the conversation flows like wine. Oh, I keep looking for the day that I can leave these blues behind. All these years I've known you, seems like we just met yesterday. Good times and the bad times, been with me all the way. Comforts me to know that there's someone listening to the songs I sing. Oh, sometimes I just wish there was someone to sing for me. Guitars and pretty girls and fishing with my feet in the sea. Oh, these are some things I love. This song's for me. Smile, I'd like to think would bring a smile to most any man. These hard times make it hard to find the peaceful life that we all understand. Why I have the need to plant the seeds and water that they reach up under big blue skies while Jerry and smiles and no one cries today. Friends and good music, playing out there like Jerry did. Oh, won't you play it again?
Song for my soul about the joys of this life
about big dreams and big machines, fixing things with my own two hands. Oh, these are the things I love. This song's for me.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Steve McMurray, Mike Ashworth, Mike Gugino, Thompson Guitars, Americana Vibes, and The Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at The Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. And remember, it's okay to be happy.